Welcome to ACC Nation Podcast. NC State leads ACC teams in the NWCA Top 25. The Wolfpack hold a spot in the Top 10. There's a race to the top of Eagle Gymnastics. North Carolina, NC State, Pitt, New Hampshire, and George Washington are upping this year's competition. Florida State men's and women's indoor track and field are dominating the conference in the latest nationwide polling. The men are number 2. The women are number 7. In ice hockey, Notre Dame men are 11. Boston College women are number 7 in the USCHO polls. In the coming weeks, new preseason polls from the AVCA as collegiate beach volleyball gets underway. Collegiate rowing is just ahead, and golf as well. All, dare I say, just a stroke away. ITA team tennis, North Carolina and Duke are in the top 5 on the women's side, and Wake Forest continues as the top team in the country on the men's side. This week, we'll take a look at individual rankings. Men's and women's preseason lacrosse polls are at accnation.net, and we have a special edition podcast this week and a story with Michael Kylo Kittleson of Fast Pitch News, where we take a look at college softball and what's in store for the ACC. Big story in ACC women's basketball this week. Number 3 Louisville knocked off number 2 UConn. An upset win for Jeff Waltz's team as the Cardinals continue to improve incrementally. Asia Dura and Dana Evans hit 10 of 11 threes for the Cardinals. Pretty amazing stat there. Dura chalked up 24. Evans 20. Sam Furing and Jasmine Jones had double-doubles against the Huskies. Jones 13 points, 12 rebounds. Furing 10 points, 12 rebounds. There are 5 ACC women's teams in the AP Top 25. We should see some shuffling in the poll this week. On the men's side, 7 ACC teams in the AP Top 25. And a shuffling we will go after some definitive performances, Savion. Definitively bad in some instances.
Yeah.
Couple of noteworthy games this week. Virginia squeaked out an OT win over NC State. North Carolina over Louisville. Virginia Tech 47, NC State 24. I have to say that out loud because even after having watched it, I'm still shaking my head. That was one oogly game.
Yeah, 24 points in 20-minute halves is pretty bad.
Yeah. Let's look at the Saturday games here and go over some of these and some of the performances. I have a good friend that a colleague and have worked with for many, many years who went to St. John's, and he was bringing up all the past games that St. John's has come out of nowhere and surprised Duke. And I was thinking to myself, hey, not this time.
not this game.
And that was a pretty evident, I must say, from the start. But I will say this, St. John's is a good team, you know, and a good coach, great players on that team. But as one person in media who wrote up this story said, they just aren't in the same class. Duke over St. John's, do you have any observations about this game? I mean, it, you know, out of conference in the middle of the season, which is a little unusual to some degree, but nonetheless, it's, you know, it's a good, usually a good game.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the how, you know, we talk about how St. John's just isn't Duke's league. You take away the one individual player, Zion Williams, in 29, 6, and 5 and whatnot, St. John's probably could have won the game or stayed in. They wouldn't have lost by 30 points, essentially, in my opinion. They kept relatively everybody else in check. I mean, R.J. Barrett was 6 of 15 from the field. Cam Reddish, 4 of 10. They kept two of the other star freshmen for Duke relatively in check. They just couldn't handle the man-child that we've grown accustomed to in Zion Williamson. But, I mean, they still lost by 30 points, but you have to look at it from St. John's point of view is, besides the one freak of nature on the court, everything else was handled and taken care of. So we did to the best of our ability. Because, I mean, you're not going to find many other 6'7", 6'8", 260, 270 players who can jump and outmuscle anybody on probably your team or your coaching staff, especially your strength and conditioning coach, maybe on the football team for that school. Like, there's only so much you can do to contain Zion on a college level. So you kind of got to walk away with a moral victory if you're Shane Johns.
Yeah.
Duke, it's Zion or bust, honestly, because it's ridiculous what this young man is doing on a night in and night in basis, night out basis.
And it's scary, the thought that he might be out a game or two, you know, and I hope that doesn't happen, but it does make a big difference. It's sort of like Ty Jerome has been, you know, with that ugly performance against NC State, back issues, which seem to be this reoccurring things. And unfortunately, as young as he is, that's going to be a real problem as he gets older, which is a shame. Maybe by then we'll have figured out how to fix those sort of things. But, you know, when you have players who are, you know, we talk about glue players. I think Zion is somebody who makes stuff happen there. So I'm not sure he's totally the glue player. Barrett, I would say, is more that guy, but certainly makes a big difference. Ty Jerome, again, I wouldn't call him totally the glue player for Virginia, but man, is he makes a big difference when he's playing. I got a question for you, because I know you're an NBA fan. I hear all this talk about, and this is something we've been going back and forth over the last couple of weeks. I hear a lot of talk about Zion Williamson being number one in the NBA draft. I don't see that. I think he's going to be a top five pick, and I can definitely say you'd be out of your mind not to take him in the top five, but I would rather go with Barrett. If I were picking between the two, I want somebody who's contributing in a broader sense, and I think he's going to be more of a long-term player. What's your perspective on Zion being the top draft pick?
I see it based off of, and everybody will throw this out, it's the word that they use when it comes to the draft, it's potential. He has the potential to be beyond great. I mean, it's LeBron James-esque, because I remember growing up and they never put on any high school basketball games. But the first high school basketball game I remember going on ESPN was LeBron's game, and seeing how this massive human being, I mean, 6'9", 260 at 18, 19 years old, mm-hmm. that's huge. Yeah. That's a defensive lineman at one of the top SEC schools on the basketball court. Seeing that and athleticism, that speed, that strength, it just makes teams salivate, honestly. Like, you just, if you go to create a My Player on NBA 2K or whatever sports game you play, you make a Zion Williamson, you make a LeBron James type player.
Mm-hmm.
So for these NBA teams, that's why they drool. I agree with you. I don't see the top number one overall pick, because the thing with Zion's game is it's based strictly to me off of athleticism and his ability to be faster, stronger, and jump higher than everybody on the court right now. When you go to the NBA and you have people smaller than you, bigger than you, that can do the same things you do,
mm-hmm.
you kind of it gets nullified. And then as you get older, like you said, like RJ Barrett's game is a game that he can play this way at 19, he can play this way at 29, he can play this way at 39. This the consistency of the game. But with Zion, the athleticism, by the time he hits 30, there's going to be somewhat of a drop-off. It won't be like a falling off a cliff drop-off, but there will be a drop-off. And hopefully by that time in 10 years, he would have added a more consistent jump shot, a more back-to-the-basket game, maybe a better dribble-drive attack game and whatnot. If he adds those things to his game, then he'll be able to, as he loses that athleticism, still be an effective player. But more times than not, what we see with these type of kids, these athletes, that stuff, it doesn't come. Or when it does come, it's at the latter end of the career where, mm-hmm. had it come at the right time, he could have added another 5-10 years to his career. So I'm right there with you on Zion. Like I if you want to put tickets, if you want to fill up the seats, if you want to sell merchandise, if you want to just ball out in that regards, then Zion Williamson's your pick. You're going to sell out, sell a bunch, highlight reels, ESPN top 10, whatever you want. Zion is your man. But if you want long-term basketball longevity and somebody to probably build around, there are not just RJ Barrett. There's a kid out of Murray State, the point guard, who is just an athletic freak but has the ball passing vision of any of the top point guards in the NBA right now. I would even lean with him as a better quality long-term pick than Zion.
When you're that size, all that banging, and the joints, you know.
Yep.
And really, you get to a point where if you're that size of a player, you have to play smart.
Yes.
Now, and I don't know enough about him to say is he a thinker. Is he somebody who's, as you kind of point out, are you seeing the whole court? Are you seeing the whole game? Because those are the types of players right there that are dangerous. Because if you're seeing the whole thing, then that makes you really killer. It doesn't make any difference how big you are. Now, Steph Curry is an example.
Yeah, that's a prime example, right? I still remember hearing about Steph Curry. It was after that that first NCAA tournament appearance they had where he got them to the Elite Eight, and he purposely stood in the corner for one of the regular season's games because their team knew that they were focusing all on him. So he purposely removed himself from the offensive end of the court. It was probably his lowest ever output in college, just so that the other four players could basically run the offense and help. I believe they won that game. But it's one of those things that you have to see that your ability, the stuff that people are watching out for, if you have to, you have to kind of put that to the side in order to let everybody else be successful. And not many people can swallow that pride and do that for their team, especially on a college level where you're viewed as the guy. I mean, Zion's viewed as the number one overall pick, once in a decade talent. So to essentially nullify yourself at some points to help your team win, those are things that we still have to wait and see.
So I'll go out on a limb and say that he's not the number one pick. And just for all the reasons that we just outlined, and I don't think there's any shame in that whatsoever. I wouldn't be all that upset. I mean, you know, talking about money, sure. And who wouldn't like the extra millions that come with that? But if I were to go in the top five, you know, that's good enough for me because I know I'm going someplace where I'm going to make a difference. And quite frankly, I would rather go to a team where I'm going to make a significant difference rather than just being part of it may be not even getting out on the floor as a starting five. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's a possibility with some of the teams that are being talked about picking him. I, on the other hand, am the kid that the coach used to send out on the floor to take a charge from somebody like Zion. So, you know, it was like, hey, come on over here, kid. Yeah, you want to get some playing time? See that big guy right there? Go and stand in front of him. Yeah, short career. Anyway, let's move on here. So we got that Duke win over St. John's, which some good points there about it could have been a lot closer if. But let's go to FSU and Georgia Tech. Florida State pulling off a win here. I don't think it was that much of a struggle, but Georgia Tech continues to show well. Florida State maybe plateauing?
Yeah, I would absolutely agree that Florida State seems to be plateauing. I mean, they only had two players in double figures, and they played 10, 11 players deep and whatnot, so they weren't getting too much offensive output from many of the players. They shot as a team 35%, 25% from the three. And this is a team that they played in Georgia Tech that's 3-6 in the conference. Georgia Tech, like you said, they have been improving, but this is a team that, based off what we're expecting from Florida State, this should have been more than a 10-point victory. This should have been a slightly bigger, larger blowout. This is a game where you really kind of find your rhythm as a team and you kind of hitting on all cylinders in this. You get those dominating wins to kind of show everybody that you're taking the positive corner, and it doesn't seem like Florida State's doing that. They're 4-4 in the conference. They have a 16-5 record. So all their majority of the losses come from playing in conference, and that's really the meat and potatoes of basketball teams, you know, their rep essentially, because you can go and do great, as you saw. Florida State basically went 12-1 out of conference to start the season. And then they've dropped down. Yes, they're 16-5, which is still a winning record, but they're in conference now against the people that they're going to play at least twice. The teams that know them better than the out-of-conference teams, and they're struggling in a sense. So that, to me, that raises a bunch of red flags as to see, you know, are they really as good as advertised, or, as you put it, have they hit a plateau and they're just kind of going to be like this consistently throughout the rest of the season? So it's the question is still there and remains to be seen, but I would agree that they've hit a plateau.
Our next game is North Carolina over Louisville. And I kind of looked at this game as being a a big challenge for both teams, to be frank. Roy Williams and the Tar Heels have had struggles this season. To be frank about it, I think this is a team that's loaded with talent. But they just, we've talked about this, they just seem so kind of uninspired, or something's not clicking, or, you know, I can't put my finger on the button to say that's the reason why. Now, the other side of this equation is Louisville and Chris Mack and a team that has been rising dramatically and doing some wonderful things, and don't have all of their, you know, things together here team-wise, because, I mean, they're rebuilding, right? So yep. Expecting them to be where they are right now at the beginning of the season, no, I don't think anybody did. Nobody with half a brain. But but those with full brains who did, congratulations to you. I'll pat you on the back. You're smarter than everybody else, including your own coach. But anyway, the whole point here is that this was one of those do-or-die games. Because this is one of those instances where, you know, North Carolina really had to step up. And Louisville had an opportunity to really, really make a dent in the ACC.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, you look at their conference records. North Carolina 7-1, and now because of the loss, Louisville 7-2. So you're seeing two quality ACC teams who are basically running at the top of the conference, clashing and whatnot. And Louisville, I mean, based on the first half, they're down 16 points at halftime. So this looked like a game that UNC was just going to run away with, and Louisville was going to, the Louisville that we believed them to be at the beginning of the season was what we were getting at halftime. But they bounced back and they really put the clamps in and turned it around against UNC, made it a closer game. I mean, a 10-point victory is a 10-point victory, but games are always, especially basketball, is a tale of two halves. And UNC, in my opinion, won the first half. And Louisville won the second half. Unfortunately, the gap was too big for Louisville to overcome. But I'm right there with you with North Carolina. This team has five stars throughout. They have veteran Luke May's been there what now feels like 10 years.
Yeah.
He's still there. This is a team that, and they had four other stars in double figures and whatnot. So it was a good output, but it's just not like. It's weird with North Carolina. It is hard to find the words, because it's just like something isn't right. Something is not hitting on all cylinders. Or maybe we're just seeing that you can have all the heralded top five-star whatever recruits and whatnot, but when it comes to playing college basketball and playing inside of a system, I'm starting to think actually it might be Roy Williams and his system and what they're being told to run that's not getting the results that we're expecting and whatnot. I think that's maybe what we really need to look at, is a system that's being run and the players in that system. Because you can get the five-star recruit all you want, but if he doesn't help and work inside of your system and what you're trying to do, you're basically going to be running off the cliff and not having the results that you want. And that's what we're kind of seeing. Yes, they won, but this is a North Carolina team who should be more dominant than what we're actually seeing.
Yeah, and I think you hit it on the head with Roy's system. You might want to look at that from the perspective, you know, we've talked about this millions of times with other teams, other coaches, and other sports, where you may have a set idea of how you want to run something, but you know that old adage of putting a square peg into a round hole? You have to make an adjustment as a coach. That's why you're there. You find the talent and what they're capable of doing, and then you adjust your program to accommodate that. And a lot of people just kind of like, why should the coach accommodate? Because you're working with people who have limited abilities in some areas and more in others. So you want to exploit the best, not the worst. And if you can bring along the worst and make it better, that's cool. Okay, but that's not the way the real world works. Find a way to flux there a little bit. Just a comment about Luke May and how long he's been there. Look very closely at him in the next television broadcast. That dude has been there so long, he has gray in his beard. Okay.
Okay, this is a college kid. Wow.
And I'm just tongue in cheek.
That's all good.
Oh, gosh. And now everybody's going to be watching really closely. Hey, he does you. I see some there. It's the light. It's the light, I'm telling you. Virginia Tech over NC State. Man, this is just my God. And now I'm going to take some people to task here. NC State fans, come on, folks. Really, you make excuses for all kinds of stuff, but now you can't be selling this to people who have a clue that, the team was just having an off offensive night. They were just missing their shots. It wasn't Virginia Tech's defense.
No, you don't shoot 17% as a team from the field and just it's an off night. You ain't that bad of an off night.
No. And it's an embarrassment. It really was an embarrassing game, I think, for both. And we can make fun of all kinds of stuff here, make light of stuff. But to be honest with you, I what the heck happened? I mean, granted, okay, we'll give them a cold hand, okay? But you don't have 24 points in a college basketball game with a cold hand. I can make those points. And I was the guy who just got run over by Zion, okay? Now, this is just insane. And the more I watched this game, I was just like, is this really happening? I mean, I saw one series where I believe that NC State must have pulled down about 8 rebounds. Couldn't get the shot to go in. Now, some of that was defense, definitely. Some of it was just poor shooting. But the whole game, come on.
Yeah. I mean, the halftime score is 20-14. And at that point, it was still anybody's game. You can't really make these are Division I basketball teams. NC State is not one of these sorry programs that don't have any history. You have to absolutely be ashamed as a NC State fan, even a college basketball fan, because 24 points in you played 40 minutes of basketball and scored 24 points. Essentially, you scored 12 baskets in 40 minutes of basketball. Now, if we're going to play with like my friends and whatnot over at the little rec center, that's usually like 2 games worth of basketball. We play to 11.
Yeah.
These are athletes. These are kids who are going to school to run up and down the court, shoot the basketball, dunk, play defense, do all the stuff that needs to be basketball players, and you gave us 24 points. Braxton Beverly went 0-for-9 from 3.
Mm-hmm.
So at what point do you miss so many threes? Do you figure, maybe I should just take a step closer inside and shoot a regular jump shot?
Yeah, if you're not hitting something, adjust.
Something. As a team, they shot 7% from 3 as a team. Wow. And they went 9 players deep. Like that, this is, And it's funny because NC State fans, weren't they complaining about the UVA game and all this stuff? And you guys scored 60-some-odd points in that game to turn around and do this type of performance. Kind of nullifies anything you have to say, if you ask me.
Yep. I'd complain and whine all you want, but it'll get to a point where people are going to tune you out. And I think they've already gotten to that point where it's like, okay. Heard enough.
You scored 24 points in the college basketball game. You can't say anything after that. You done. No more talking. Stop. You can't say anything. I'm sorry. I keep looking at the score and I'm just like trying to wrap my head around. You look at the score. It's like this is a football game. Virginia Tech beat NC State 47-24. No, this is a basketball game.
Right. And you can't wrap your head around this game. And like I said, if you watch the whole game, you come out nonplussed. And wow, I don't know.
Well, if you watch the whole game, I give you all of my respect because you sat through probably one of the worst college basketball games of all time. So my hat's off to you to sit there and watch the whole entire game.
My eyes were bleeding at the end, so I'm just saying. Let's move on to this next game, Virginia over Miami. Ty Jerome being out, you see where there's some glue. Well, he contributes a lot to this team. Let's put it that way. And you can see it when you watch the game. You can see how there seems to be kind of a disconnect offensively when he's not playing. And you'd think it would be there. Somebody's got to step up, because what if Ty is out for the season? I'm just saying, what if? You know, right at this point, he's not. But, I mean, what if? Same thing with Zion. What if he's out for the entire season? What do you do? You got to make some adjustments. Somebody's got to step up. After that really poor performance, I mean, it was horrible against NC State and going into overtime. This wasn't much better. It was just cold offensively. And it seemed disconnected.
Anytime you lose a leader, especially an offensive leader on the team, there's going to be that transitional period where you're trying to figure out who's, like you said, who's going to step up and be the guy. And we're seeing that live and firsthand. Like, they're still trying to figure that out. Braxton Key came off the bench and he didn't light up the scoreboard. Only had 5 points, but he had 8 rebounds and 4 assists and whatnot. He's contributing in other factors, and that probably helped get them extra possessions, helped move the ball around and found open people. So that's a positive step in the right direction. That's a guy that you can essentially hopefully count on to expect more out of. You want points. You want people that, if you can get double figures from anybody or 4 or 5 of your players, you're sitting pretty. But when nobody's hitting and you're getting effort or getting plays and other, like I said, getting rebounds, getting assists, getting defensive stops, like, those things add up and those lead to victories. And I think that's what we saw with this Miami game. It was a 10-point win, but those extra little plays that made up because Ty Jerome wasn't there helped them win. Now, if they can continue getting those plays, but just hit a couple more shots on the offensive side of the ball, and you'll be right back to where you were with Ty Jerome. Mm-hmm. So it's still that transitional period that they're just trying to figure out what they're going to do in case the absence is longer than expected.
Here's something that I also notice about Virginia on offense is that, I think this is partly because of the way people are brought up in the world of basketball. Some people are more used to playing in a fast-paced environment. And when you get into an environment where you're slowed down 50% on offense, that's tough. That's a tough adjustment. If you've been playing since you were like 2-3 years old, you know, playing with a ball and learning how to play basketball and going hard charging on offense, and then all of a sudden you get into an environment where it's like, ooh, let's slow down. That throws people off their rhythm, and it's a rhythm, a muscle memory rhythm that's been set up since they were very young. And so I think that's an adjustment for a lot of the players on that team. And eventually they sort of get into it as they spend more time in the system. So we'll see what happens. Let's move on to this next game. Notre Dame, Boston College. Neither one of these teams having a good season, and Boston College is really kind of falling flat in the ACC.
It's only a 6-point game and whatnot, so this was anybody's game. But it's from two of the teams in the later half of the conference, so you can take what you can get from either fan bases. Honestly, it's just not clicking for Boston College. I mean, Mitchell only didn't score a single point. Contributed to other factors, but everybody else on the starting five was in double figures, and their bench combined for a total of 3 points for Boston College. So they had a lot of help in that regard as well. It's not looking pretty for either team. These are the type of games that both teams get their players get to fill up the stat sheet and walk away with, oh, I scored 21 points and we won, or I scored 20 points, 25 points in a losing effort. So it's good in that regard, but overall, these are two teams not going anywhere fast.
Yep, and don't look for them to really do a whole lot in the ACC tournament based on this play. We still have a month to go. Syracuse over Pitt. Syracuse continues to really kind of struggle. with whether or not they want to be in postseason play. But they did pick up a win here, and Pitt, you know, they're in that first year struggle of building rebuilding something. Really, when I look at 3 year total turn, I just don't see Pitt. Ooh, I don't see any consistency here with Pitt, and which is a shame. And I think they're just hitting a kind of a down period. I think they'll resurge here as we get a little further into February. Syracuse, I sit here and scratch my head over them constantly. I don't get what's happening there, because again, you have some very talented players. And certainly a coach would have some kind of a clue as to which, well, sometimes I wonder whether he knows which end is up.
I was about to say.
But, you know, there's no denying that he's, you know, a sharp cookie. I mean, he hasn't gotten as far as he has in life, especially in college basketball, by being a failure. But, you know, again, this is what's happening here.
I'll start off with Pitt, and kind of got to take what you can get at this point after the terrible season last year. If you guys can end up with a winning record, that's a victory. That's a step in the right direction. We still have to wait for the coach to get his players in and running his system to finally see. And you have to give him the opportunity. 3 to 4 years. Let him have one entire class come all the way in as freshmen and leave out as seniors before you make any decisions on either retaining or firing him or whatnot, because you have to get a new standard in this program if you want to return to any type of success that you had previously as Pitt. When it comes to Syracuse, I'm right there with you. Boeheim is a great, fantastic coach. He has the credentials. He has the repertoire. He has everything you need. But are we seeing that, you know, his style of basketball, that 2-3 zone that Syracuse swears by and is known for, is that finally old and outdated? 2-3 zone sets up for three-pointers all day long. And if you have any style of play that the teams play now, it's transition basketball and it's three-point shots. And 2-3 zone, you're slowing down the possessions and you're packing it in. So if you're not hitting shots to get you back, to help you set your defense up on the opposite side, and it's running up and down basketball, Syracuse is going to continue to get exposed. So it's one of those things that you kind of have to match the times, and I'm not sure if Boeheim is doing that on a night-in and night-out basis. And I think that's kind of why we're seeing the inconsistency from Syracuse.
Natty Bo. Okay. Games to watch this week. Louisville at Virginia Tech, NC State at UNC, Florida State at Syracuse, Louisville at Florida State, NC State at Pitt. And of course, the big game of the week is going to be Duke at Virginia. I want to see the game.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't care about the rest of the nonsense. You know, people make that out to be this big thing that if ESPN is going to show up and have the game day and all that, and it's like,
yeah,
I'm not watching it. But, you know, and of course, students that go down there and participate in that stuff and, you know, are around it and watching it, that's a cool experience one time. After that, who cares? Quick thought on Louisville at Virginia Tech. Any, you know, like one or two word analogy of that game?
I expect Louisville to win.
Okay. And that's even at Virginia Tech. How about that? Buzz Williams and the Hokies love you. NC State at North Carolina. How about that one?
I expect North Carolina State to score more than 24 points in this game.
Well, we're going off the deep end. Florida State at Syracuse.
I think this could be an intriguing matchup. Two teams that are kind of, they're both plateauing, so to speak. And this game could be either they're going to trend upwards or your team's going to trend downwards based on the outcome of this game.
Mm. This is kind of a critical game here, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I hadn't really thought of that when I put that on the list, but the more you point that out, I'm kind of thinking, wow, this is kind of a critical point in their seasons. Louisville at Florida State.
Kind of similar to the Florida State-Syracuse game. I want Louisville, because they're not where they were expected to be at the start of the season, I would kind of give a little bit more. They could lose or win this game, and it wouldn't matter all that much. But Florida State, this is a game that you need to win to and kind of help your conference ranking and whatnot. So this is a Florida must win for Florida State.
Okay, NC State at Pitt.
This could be a game where both teams barely scored 25 points.
This has meltdown potential for the two coaches. That's all I can say about this.
Yeah, this is, I would say, honestly, a must win for NC State too, and not only must win, but must perform for NC State. Because if you have anything close to the output you just had against Virginia Tech, it's against Pitt, it's not looking good.
Yeah. And of course, as I said, the big game, Duke at Virginia.
Oof. Intriguing. That's all I can say. It's going to be an intriguing game.
I see this game as if everybody is on, I think it's a Virginia win. If anybody is off, the two players that we pointed out throughout the podcast, Zion and Ty, if those two players are off or not playing, that can make all the difference in the world in how this all turns out.
Absolutely. It's anybody's game, in my opinion. If one of the teams is missing that player, that team's more than likely going to not necessarily lose, but be at a disadvantage. If both of them are out, I would have to lean with UVA because they're at home and the style of basketball just fits better, I think, for UVA at home. So I would have to go with UVA at that point.
This is kind of a critical game in some regards because whoever loses, if it's a close loss like Virginia had at Duke, and Duke comes in and loses to Virginia by the same, you know, like 2-4 points, something like that. I think that's a good thing for both teams in the conference, and I don't see either team getting dinged for that. That sets up some really exciting things for down the road. A lot of chatter, especially. But if one team gets blown out in this, it's going to be a train wreck. Somebody's going to lose a number one seeding in the early bracketology, and will probably drop down into. Well, they'll drop out of the top five. They'll be in the top maybe eight, something like that. that'll ding them in the top 25, which, you know, overall doesn't make a whole lot of difference, but nonetheless.
Not to send any shots at UVA, but I don't think they want another number one seed after last year's.
They don't have any choice. They got
record setting.
Right now, they both got them. So, well, most people will hear this after the other big game, also known as the Super Bowl. Question, who you taking?
I don't know. I would truly just want a good game. There's a part of me that has gotten to the point where I cannot, as a football player and fan, discredit or take anything away from Tom Brady anymore. And I have to remind myself to appreciate. I got to sit there and see this man because what he's done to this point, I'm not sure we will ever see again.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those, like, living in the moment of history, especially in sports world. It's kind of weird, but something I've always looked forward to as a kid. The other part is LA is a damn good team on offense and defense, and they've basically, the last year and a half, they've been all these moves that they've made for this roster to get them to this point. If you want to see that kind of come to fruition. And, I mean, knocking off Tom Brady and the Patriots for your first Super Bowl win in the last time he was there, they beat you. It's a great storyline. So it's really a toss up. I'm leaning more towards the Rams winning. The more I look at it on paper, but it's hard to bet against that man, number 12.
Yeah, very true. And you're right about Brady and the Patriots. Dynasties and players of that caliber only come around once in a while. And those are storied histories that we take with us as humans throughout our lives. You know, we tell those stories to our grandkids, and we have great memories of, you know, what occurred. And I can go back through my life and look at some of the great football players. You know, when I was growing up, I was a huge fan of the Baltimore Colts, Johnny Unitas. And
you just showed your age.
I know. But the thing is, man, I will never forget that. You know, I was in elementary school, and back then, this is amazing. We could write letters to the football teams asking for stuff, and they'd send it to you.
Oh, that's sick.
I mean, it's amazing. I can remember kids coming in and saying, look at all the stuff I got from this team or that team or whatever. And, yeah, I did that too. So I don't have any of that stuff, unfortunately. I wish I had kept it. But, you know, you don't realize, you know, when you're younger, when you do that kind of stuff. So we'll see who eats crow this coming week. I'm going to go with the NFC team, mainly because Chicago, my team, beat the Rams. So by default, if the Rams win, then, you know, I'm saying that they're, you know how that works. It's such nonsense. Right. You know, but I'm an NFC fan, basically Chicago Bears and New Orleans Saints. And so, and that's always a big tussle in the household when the two get together. But I'm going to go with the Rams, and I hope that they win by at least a touchdown, maybe more. And I think that that's a good thing for football, and for a variety of reasons. And I do have a lot of respect for Brady. I do have a lot of respect for Belichick and the Patriots program and what they've accomplished. They are quite amazing, and it is a story that we will remember and I hope cherish, because it is pretty unique. And you can hate them all you want. That's fine. But they are very unique and a very, very talented group of people. I hope the Rams kick their rear ends. And both of us probably will be eating crow next week, just because, you know, we're going with the contrary side of things. Anyway.
It is what it is.
Yeah, it is what it is. Be sure to follow Will on Twitter at Will's World MN. Xavion is at XAYVEON. And I'm at ACC The Q. You'll find ACCNation.net on Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, and YouTube at ACC Nation, and at ACC Nation Sports on Facebook. Be sure to lock in your homepage at ACCNation.net. Until next time, cheers.
Bye now.